Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 20th of July, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll be talking to Marianne Mills and also Marsha Partlow about Southeast Senior Services and the services they offer. We'll also be talking to David James Sneed and Darren Snyder about the Cooperative Extension Service, about composting and companion gardening. That's coming up today on a Juneau afternoon, along with Writer's Almanac, music, and more. With a forecast for today, tonight, calls for decrease in clouds, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, partly cloudy skies in the morning, then becoming sunny. Forecast for Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies with the low temperatures around 53 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Wisconsin, more school districts have qualified for sparsity aid this year. That's money to help smaller rural districts provide services across sparsely populated, often poor communities. As Wisconsin Public Radio's Brian Bull reports, the need is up at a time when funding is being whittled down, which affects a largely Native American school district.
Larry Wemet is superintendent of the Lac des Flambeaux School District, which is getting $117,000 in sparsity aid this year. He says that money will help, but it's $20,000 less for transportation expenses compared to their last award from the state.
Almost all of our students ride the bus. Our school district is located right on Highway 47, which is a very busy highway and a hazardous highway. Students have to cross that to get to our school district, so that's a fixed cost. There's just no way around it. We have to pay for bus transportation.
This school year, 130 Wisconsin school districts qualify for sparsity aid, 7 more than last year. Some of the new districts became eligible after enrollment declined, while others saw their poverty levels increase. But John Johnson of the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction says while more schools have qualified for sparsity aid, the new biennial state budget cuts it by 10%, which means less money for eligible schools.
This aid program really is important to help districts that struggle with declining enrollment, that have highly variable property values, that may have a low median income in their areas, and because they are large geographically, have higher transportation costs.
Meanwhile, Wemet says Lac des Flambeaux district officials will look into private and federal grants to help cover costs. They're also still seeing how an $800 million statewide cut to education will play out. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
In an effort to increase tourism on South Dakota's Pine Ridge Reservation and educate non-natives about Lakota culture, Oglala Lakota College is announcing the opening of the Oglala Cultural Experience. As Jim Kent reports, the summer-long event is aimed at offering visitors a cross-section of Lakota culture as presented by members of the Pine Ridge community.
The Oglala Cultural Experience combines traditional Lakota activities like archery, storytelling, and dance with a theatrical presentation of the classic book, Black Elk Speaks. Oglala Lakota College President Tom Shortbull began planning the Oglala Cultural Experience last fall. He says visiting the Polynesian Cultural Center in Hawaii sparked the idea.
The Polynesian Cultural Center is a place that when people come to Hawaii, that's definitely one of the stops that they make. So we want to see this, and what we can do for South Dakota is to enhance South Dakota's tourism efforts by having a place where non-Indian people can come and learn more about who we are as a people.
Shortbull hopes the Oglala Cultural Experience will expand the market for local Lakota artists and inspire other talented Lakota to pursue their crafts. Shortbill also sees the twice-weekly event as an opportunity for Lakota people to learn more about their own culture. The first production of Black Elk Speaks is slated for July 29th, preceded by the opening afternoon of Lakota cultural activities. Oglala Lakota College plans to begin the Oglala Cultural Experience during the month of June in 2012. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs visits a wounded Marine at the Bethesda Naval Hospital in Maryland. Larry Echohawk went to the hospital Tuesday to see Corporal Philip Baldwin. Baldwin is from Fort Hall, Idaho, and a member of the Shoshone Bannock tribes. He lost both legs during a foot patrol last month in Afghanistan. Corporal Baldwin is continuing his rehabilitation at the Naval Hospital. On this day in 1972, the Alaska Native Village Corporation for King Island was incorporated. Located in the Bering Straits region, native hunters and ivory carvers first occupied the island, which is mostly precipitous rock. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are Marianne Mills and Marcia Partlow from Southeast Senior Services. Marianne Mills is the program director there, and Marcia Partlow works in nutrition, transportation, and support services. Thank you for coming down the station, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, who wants to give me an overview of Southeast Senior Services, its mission?
I'll do that. Southeast Senior Services reaches older Alaskans, age 16 older, and supports their family caregivers. The purpose is to help the older Alaskans stay healthy, active, and maintain their independent living for as long as possible. And we do that through a variety of programs throughout Southeast Alaska. For example, we have a network of 12 senior centers all over the region, from Yakutat in the north down to Prince of Wales and Ketchikan in the south. We also have, in Juneau, we have an adult day program called the Bridge Adult Day Program. We have care coordination, case management services. We have counseling for seniors and for their family caregivers. We have a regional senior information office and family caregiver support resource center. And probably most people are familiar with the Caravan door-to-door transportation service, which we operate here in Juneau.
We talked to people yesterday about this Juneau Senior Needs Survey. It was just recently completed, and Caravan got glowing remarks from everybody.
Oh, great. It's good to hear.
How is the program funded?
Well, through a variety of sources, federal grants, state grants, local funding, contributions from local community members. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Senior Disability Services, provides a number of our grants. And then we kind of everywhere and anywhere else we can get funding from, we go there. Caravan has a contract with the City and Borough of Juneau to provide the paratransit services for seniors and people with disabilities in Juneau. So those are just some examples of some funding. But grants, contracts, and individual contributions are the main sources.
And who's eligible for the services?
People age 16 and older are all welcome to come to the senior center or to use the Caravan. Our other programs, like the Bridge Adult Day Program or the care coordination, have more particular criteria, but the meals and rides are 60 and over. Everybody's welcome.
Tell me a little bit more about the Meals on Wheels program. I know John Gagin, one of our volunteers at the station, is one of the drivers in that service.
He's great. We're always looking for volunteer delivery drivers with the Meals on Wheels. We serve or deliver about 70 home-delivered meals each day. And in Juneau, we depend upon volunteers to make those deliveries. All the meals are prepared at the Juneau Senior Center, and then volunteers, and they sign up for different delivery routes, one in Douglas or downtown or Valley, Auk Bay, different routes. And each volunteer takes like one day a week, or else they prefer to be a substitute for someone else. And that's kind of how that works.
But how long does it take out of their schedule?
Hour and a half.
Why don't you give a phone number right now in case people want to do that?
463-6179 is the Meals on Wheels number.
What kind of staff does the Southeast Senior Services have?
Great staff. what are you looking? Well, we have people from all walks of life, Southeast Senior Services is a part of Catholic Community Service, so I'm glad you asked that question, because Our staff are from all faiths, and we serve people of all religions. We're not all Catholic, and we don't just serve Catholic people. We serve everybody. And so our staff are from all walks of life, all ages, all educational experiences. Some of the positions are you just need a GED or a diploma, and some of them you need a master's degree. It depends on what the position is.
How many people are on the staff?
Well, each program has a different number of staff. I'd say throughout Southeast Alaska, Southeast Senior Services has about 150 staff members.
Do you have any idea how many clients you serve on an annual basis?
I would say 2,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Who's the manager of the Juneau Senior Center?
Oh, currently the acting manager, site manager, is David De Hoyos. He's been in that position since early June, but we are in the process of hiring a permanent site manager. She should be on board in a couple of weeks.
And where is the Juneau Senior Center located?
It's located at the bottom of 12th Street, 12th and Egan, and it's in the facility called, it is not part of the Mountain View Residence, but it's in that same building.
What do you see as the greatest challenge in managing the Southeast Senior Services programs?
Well, one of the challenges is the people will think the Juneau Senior Center is the same thing as the Mountain View Senior Housing. And so it's really important that we let people know that the Senior Center is for all seniors, anybody in the community, anybody age 16 and older, to come in, have lunch, come enjoy activities, exercise, play bridge, whatever the activities are, you know, work on the ceramics. There's a ceramics room there. And so a lot of times people get confused and they think the Senior Center is housing. Senior Center is not a housing. It's like a community focal point for senior activities and events and meetings. And in this particular Juneau Senior Center, it happens to be in the same building as the Mountain View Senior Housing, so people get a little confused. So that's one of the challenges that we face.
I think the other bigger challenge is that the kitchen located in the Juneau Senior Center is a hub for meal service that goes beyond that center itself. So the kitchen staff are cooking meals for the Meals on Wheels recipients, the Bridge Adult Daycare, and the Douglas Senior Center. They're producing about 120 meals per day, and the complexity of distribution of those meals and the scheduling to provide that many meals early in the day and then another whole set of meals by noon, it's kind of like putting a puzzle together every day. It involves volunteer drivers, the caravan drivers, many staff, someone that manages the volunteer program, Suzanne Elder. So all these people work together and are quite successful on a daily basis.
You mentioned some of the events going on at the Southeast Senior Center. What other events are happening there?
That's a good question. There are quite a lot of events happening and ongoing. The first, of course, is the Hot Nutritious Lunch, which is served daily at noon at the center 5 days a week. The Ceramic Studio is open Mondays and Wednesdays from 10 to 2, and instructors will assist seniors with painting and firing pieces there. Duplicate Bridge meets on Sundays at 1 o'clock. Any senior is welcome to participate in these activities. Contract Bridge meets Mondays and Wednesdays from 1 to 4. The Diabetic Support Group meets the second Monday of the month at 1 o'clock. Low Vision Support Group meets the last Tuesday of the month at 1:30. Coming up in September and October, there will be a fall prevention and exercise class. And community volunteers who would like to offer activities of interest to seniors are encouraged to contact the Senior Center.
And I know organizations like the Juneau Pioneers hold their regular meetings there as well.
Almost every single month, they have a meeting scheduled with a dinner, and it's wonderful to have them there. They're quite a presence, and we really enjoy that.
How does the senior find out more information about these programs? Is there a website or?
There is a Catholic Community Service website, www.ccsjuno.org. But most of the current information about activities can be learned from calling the acting site manager, David De Hoyos, at 463-6175. And also, the menus are printed daily in the Juno Empire, weekly in the Juno Empire on Sundays in the Neighbors section.
You must get this secondhand. What do you think is people's favorite meal that's served there?
I know what mine is. Meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and gravy. I love that.
Well, I guess that's true. Their all-time favorite meal of the year, of course, is Thanksgiving, which is all the trimmings usually. Different seniors like different meals. There's no one favorite, but that's a really great
question.
Some
people actually like liver and onions, if you can believe that.
Well, everybody in different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been talking to Marianne Mills, Program Director for Southeast Senior Services, and also Marcia Parlow, Nutrition, Transportation, and Support Services Coordinator. Thank you very much for coming down the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Can't think of anything else.
No. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Did a great job.
How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get-up has been. Now old age is golden, so I've heard said, but sometimes I wonder as I crawl into bed, with my ears in a drawer, my teeth in a cup, my eyes on the table until I wake up. As sleep dims my vision, I say to myself, is there anything else I should lay on the shelf? But though nations are warring and businesses vexed, I'll still stick around to see what happens next. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. When I was young, my slippers were red. I could kick up my heels right over my head. When I was older, my slippers were blue, but still I could dance the whole night through. Now I am older, my slippers are black. I huff to the store and I puff my way back. But don't you laugh, I don't mind at all. I'd rather be huffing than not puff at all. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. Now I get up in the morning and dust off my wits, open the paper and read the obits. If I'm not there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and go back to bed. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 20th of July, 2011. It's the birthday of Francesco Petrarca, better known as Petrarch, born 1304 in Arezzo, Tuscany. He was a devout Catholic. He loved classical literature. He moved to Avignon after his father died, worked in clerical positions so he could work on his own writing. And on April the 6th, 1327, when he was 23 years old, in the Church of St. Clair in Avignon, he first saw the woman we know as Laura. We don't know if they spoke. We don't know if she rejected him or why. We don't know anything about who she is. but he began to write a series of poems about her over the course of 40 years, poems of unrequited love, 366 poems of which 316 were in sonnet form, the collection called Il Canzoniere, the Songbook, about his feelings for Laura and also about his own spiritual evolution and his renunciation of the world in favor of trust in God. In 1348, the plague, the Black Death, claimed many of his friends, and Laura was one of its victims. She died 21 years to the day after he first saw her in Avignon, and Petrarch in 1374. It's the birthday of the novelist Thomas Berger, 1924, Lackland, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. Left college, 1943, joined the army. After the war, he was with the occupying forces in Berlin, came home, finished college, moved to New York City. Published his first novel, Crazy in Berlin, in 1958, after a rough start. He said afterward, "After 2.5 years of writing, I suddenly understood that there was only a handful of pages of Crazy in Berlin worth preserving, and I discarded the manuscript and started over." He went on to write 3 sequels. And then in 1964, he wrote Little Big Man, an account of the Old West as told by a white man who claims to have survived Custer's last stand. It became a big bestseller after the movie version came out in 1970. And it's the birthday of Cormac McCarthy, 1933, Providence, Rhode Island. A critic once wrote of McCarthy, "A man's novelist whose apocalyptic vision rarely focuses on women." McCarthy does not write about sex, love, or domestic issues. Known for his border trilogy, All the Pretty Horses, The Crossing, and Cities of the Plain, and Blood Meridian, 1985, which often turns up on lists of best novels of the 20th century. Here's a poem for today by Christina Rossetti, A Green Cornfield. The earth was green, the sky was blue, I saw and heard one sunny morn a skylark hang between the two, a singing speck above the corn. A stage below, in gay accord, white butterflies danced on the wing, and still the singing skylark soared, and silent sank and soared to sing. The cornfield stretched a tender green to right and left beside my walks. I knew he had a nest unseen somewhere among the million stalks. And as I paused to hear his song, while swift the sunny moments slid, perhaps his mate sat listening long and listened longer than I did. A Green Cornfield by Christina Rossetti. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:24, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. The latest Gustavus Community Center fundraiser is happening this weekend on Saturday, July 23rd. It's the Gustavus debut of Tramwreck, a rock and folk grass band well known here in Juneau. Local talent featuring Jamie Marks, Heidi Johnson, Bobby Jones, Tanny Lewis, Dave Kovach, T.J. Lazar, and Colin Osterhout. Music starts at 8 o'clock, and there's a small cover charge, and there will be pizza by the slice and Alaskan beer for sale, compliments of the Alaska Brewing Company. Here's a little bit of music from a couple folk festivals ago from the group Tramwreck.
your mind.
It ain't right, it ain't right, it ain't right.
Well, if you leave you troubled, hurry all the time. Well, I went down this river, felt that cold, cold breeze. Well, I went down this river, felt that cold, cold breeze. I said, dear Lord, answer me this one prayer. Bring my woman to her knees. Run your mind.
Is a group Tramrec recorded at the Alaska Folk Festival a couple of years ago. They're performing this Saturday, July 23rd at 8 o'clock. It's a benefit for the Gustavus Community Center. In the studio right now is with me is James David Sneed and also Darren Snyder here to talk about compost and also things going on with the Cooperative Extension Service. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you doing?
Pretty good today. So, James David, you are an expert on compost from what I hear.
Well, I've made a few piles over the years, yeah.
What are the basic rules of composting?
Well, I don't go by exact ratios and formulas much anymore, but I do have some basic principles. And one is a lot of different materials and well mixed when I start out and then stirred often, lots of oxygen. But my basic principles are things that have carbon and things that have nitrogen. And I generally find things that are dried and withered are more carbonaceous. And things that are green and soft tend to be more nitrogenous. So that's a good layman's way of mixing them.
Are there different types of compost bins or heaps?
Yes, but they're all basically the same, except for when you compost right in the ground itself.
What is the job description of compost anyway?
It's a matter of allowing the microbes and fostering the microbes that decompose dead and dying biological material so that you re-release the material for use by other plants.
What are the things that one should not do when they're composting?
Don't let it dry out. I try never to add anything that's got a serious disease problem, like potatoes that have blight or tomatoes that have blight. Club root, you want to burn those things or otherwise put them in the trash rather than your compost. It's generally a good idea not to put things in that attract bears, which is a pity because fish is one of the best things for getting your compost really moving.
We talk a lot about invasive species. How can composting introduce exotic insects, pathogens, plant diseases, and et cetera, into Alaska, particularly, I guess, if the compost doesn't get real hot?
Well, when I was a produce manager up in Homer, I used to notice spotted cucumber beetles and things like that coming in on the produce. And if I had just plain composted the loose leaves of everything immediately, I would have been introducing those insects into a warm environment where they could make it through the winter and reproduce. For seeds, say you have something that's an invasive species and it goes to seed, well then if your compost pile isn't hot enough, those things will simply be fostered and regrow in your compost.
What kind of soil mixes do you use?
Depends what you want them for. Potting soil, I like a very finely screened compost, and for my actual growing medium, I really prefer a lot of chunky stuff in there. I like to see chunks of charcoal left over from my wood stove, various sizes. And the same thing with crushed up seashell, so that the humic acid and the microbes can break these things down over time. It's just like a time-released fertilizer, like you were buying pelleted Osmocote or something like that, except these are all natural materials.
What is biodynamic principles for the gardening?
Oh, I don't want to represent the biodynamic movement per se. I use some of their ideas. There's other people better at it than I am. But in general, I think of it as guiding yourself by nature's principles and using the forces of nature to improve the various processes, the natural organic processes that you're using in your garden. It's the guiding principle to me is that you, in your gardening, you imitate nature. And as closely as possible, you study the wild and you try to reproduce that within your garden, the various ways that the garden community, the various critters intersect and work together.
Mm-hmm. Can a home gardener make their own biodynamic formula?
I'm sorry?
Can a home gardener make their own biodynamic formula?
Oh, they can, and there's recipes and the books about it. I don't myself do much with the formulas. I pay more attention to the moons and weather. Various natural forces that I believe that when they make formulas, they're also using. Darren may be more familiar with the principles.
Oh, well, I'd just like to add, no, I agree that what you're talking about with the biodynamic gardening, and my understanding is that you're really focusing on feeding the soil and really contributing to that nutrient cycling because you're feeding the soil, which is then feeding your plants, and just contributing that. And I'd like to add on also that as far as composting goes and using formulas and stuff that, you know, it's kind of a good basic start, but it, when the rubber meets the road in Juneau or anywhere else, it's what do you have available? And that's where, you know, the creative component comes down. It's like if you're baking a cake or something, you don't just go and like if you were baking, you'd go out and you'd buy specific ingredients. Well, if you just have a cupboard full of stuff, which is more like the natural scenario when you're baking a compost pile, you just use what you have. And by understanding the basic principles of what are the high nitrogen or high carbon sources, the basics that you're trying to feed this pile, and it needs anything else that life needs. It needs oxygen, it needs moisture, it needs an environment to help these microbes thrive, you know, so you're going to, you know, feed that environment, which then, again, in turn is going to feed your garden as you use it.
What about things like municipally treated sludge?
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit nervous about municipal sludge, also municipal compost piles, due to the lack of control the gardener has over what goes into it. And generally, you know, it's like a computer, garbage in, garbage out. While it's true that composting will reduce certain pesticides and break some things down, it's by no means a complete process. And so if you're trying to keep a pretty clean garden, for me, I'd rather get things off the beach, you know, your seaweed, fish waste if you don't have bear problems, beach grass. We have wonderful deciduous trees around here that provide us with lots and lots of leaves. And then if you know anybody with goats or any form of animal like horses, that manure is just invaluable.
Mm-hmm. What about this compost heap itself? Could it be a heap like it's been done over the years or something like a Cadillac of rotating of the one that you get at the fancy stores?
Heaps are good. Grandpa, where I learned most of my gardening, he had very large heaps, and I sort of inherited that tradition. I have used boxes before, but, you know, I put a lot of energy into building the box, you know, unless you really need to keep rodents out or something like that. I think the heap is just fine. Tumblers, things like that, are better in warmer climates where you don't need as much of a mass because heat is essential to your compost and you're generating a lot of that through the decomposition. But here in the shoulder seasons and in the winter, you really lose a lot of heat radiating away from it.
I'm talking with James David Snead and Darren Snyder about compost in general, but next we're going to move on to companion planting gardening lectures happening next Monday on the 25th and also a little bit about 4-H Sustainable Harvest Summer Camps in August. Darren?
Yeah, so we have a lecture we're going to be James David and I are going to be offering on Monday night, and we're going to be at the Bill Ray Center from 6 to 8 p.m. and at room 208 there. And so the Bill Ray Center is where the extension office is, up on the second floor. And again, that's going to be on Monday. And, you know, it's primarily that talk. I'll even let James David kind of elaborate on it a little bit. But what we've been talking about is companion planting and gardening here in Southeast Alaska in general. And so that's going to be on Monday night. And then I'll get into the 4-H camp thing in a little after this maybe.
So what is companion planting? It's not planting with a friend.
Well, to me, companion planting is a sense of the community that makes up a garden. You know, your various plants, your microbes, yourself, the birds. And just like in a community, say the one you live in Juneau, you have a sense of the past and you have a sense of the future, even though you live in the present. Most folks have only read books about companion planting and what mixes well with what. But we also have the sense of things you did last year affect what you're going to plant in the same spot this year. And so there is that transition of time, and they're both last year's plants and this year's plants and next year's are all part of the same community. So you keep a good garden journal, and you know what you planted where, and you rotate things through. There's many different ways plants affect each other. One of the more common ones is that the root exudates, the things that come out of roots of plants such as garlic and the cabbage family, are fairly high in sulfur. These things can be a little bit discouraging to plants such as peas or beans that have a different microbe that fixes nitrogen from the soil, the air spaces in the soil. Another way of companion planting is planting things that will support other plants. Grandpa used to use sunflowers to support his beans, and he supported the sunflowers a little bit, but they were pretty strong. And I have a photograph of myself as a high schooler picking beans from about 15, 16 feet off the ground on a fruit ladder that ran up the sunflowers, and were able to gain that extra sunlight that wasn't available down low. Now, the idea of light and air, moisture, all these various factors that go in the garden can be enhanced by what you plant next to what and how close to. Many of our techniques that we read about in books, such as some of the things that came out of John Jevons, quite a good garden teacher in California, we have to adapt those to our own methods and evolve those methods to apply here.
Tell me more about plants like bean sprouts and sunflowers. It seems like it's an interesting way of pairing plants together.
Well, the beans, what Grandpa would do would be put in metal fence posts and two wires to hold up the sunflowers. And then he would lean alder poles or last year's sunflower stalks up against that wire and then plant beans at the base of those. And so they'd run up the old stalks and then up and down the sunflowers. Now, in what we call the three-sister tradition, some people have a four-sister form of Native American corn, beans, and squash. We planted them very different than is what is commonly done in gardens now. Too many of our gardens are imitations of farm fields, and you can't do a compatibility planting if you have, say, corn all crowded in one spot, then you have no room for the squash to get sunlight too. And my native ancestors planted corn probably around 3 feet apart in hills. Then the squash were planted in between them, and then beans were planted at the base of the corn. And the nitrogen fixed by the bacteria the microbes on the bean roots would actually feed the corn and feed the squash.
Sounds like akin to science.
It's actually where science and magic meet. It's pretty special.
It's all, yeah, and when we talk about companion planting, you know, the crop rotation is another way that people just are familiar with that term. And here in Southeast, some of our master gardeners who have been doing the gardening for years, Susanna Sandy Williams, have shared with our master gardener classes some of the favorite rotations of going through with a legume, such as the peas, which do really well here. Also fava beans, which aren't as popular, but they're also a nitrogen-fixing legume. And then going from a legume to the next season, doing a root crop, such as potatoes or carrots, and And then the next season, going with your cold crops, which are the brassicas, all the broccolis and kales, and then doing that rotation, kind of a 1-2-3, and then rotating through. And there are many benefits to this. In addition to adding nutrients, you're also preventing the buildup of pathogens, pathogenic or organisms that aren't so good, like clubroot, as James David mentioned, can occur in our soils. If your soils get infected by it, it will affect your family of crops that are those the broccoli and kale and cauliflower. But if you don't plant those the next few years, then those populations of those fungal spores will reduce. And so it's just it's a practice that that is a good practice for any level of gardener. So when we have this talk on Monday night, we're inviting all gardeners to come, and if you want to kind of learn about some of these techniques, some of the finer notes. I've just met James David. He's a good friend of one of our favorite gardeners of the region, Ed Byarski. And so he comes with high regards, and I really look forward to learning more from James David, and then also contributing to that talk there on Monday night at 6 o'clock at the Bill Ray Center.
It's just another reason to ask the experts at the Cooperative Extension Service, or people like James David or Ed Byarski.
Indeed.
I like that science and magic mixing together.
That's good stuff.
We also learn from the people that come to the class. That's a real important thing. I've taught many, many classes, and I've really found that I learn from those who come. And everyone might have a different particular pest or disease problem, and so their crop rotations, they may have found something different out. A pest common to potatoes called wireworms, and organic farmers have found that if they follow their cabbage family the next year with potatoes, the sulfur compounds left in the soil by the cabbage family repel the wireworms, and they don't have nearly the problem of them. And so by experimenting, we throw these ideas around in class and then have some discussion on it. People go home and try these things and experiment, and then they're going to share with each other and with ourselves what works.
James Stewart, philosophically, why do you get such a thrill out of gardening?
Wow. There's an intellectual part to it, and then there's a real spiritual base to it, too. And there's something very basic to me. It's just like eating salmon. There's a food security thing that transcends any concept you ever hear about on the news of worried about food security. When you gather or when you grow with respect for nature, you fit in, and it's like being back in the womb in a lot of ways. You're very secure, and you have more control over your own life.
Darren, you want to talk a little bit about the Sustainable Harvest Summer Camp in August?
Sure, thanks. We kind of building on some of these things that we're talking about here. We are offering as a 4-H in Juneau here a camp, and it's called the Sustainable Harvest Camp. So we're going to be focusing on harvests of all kinds, and we are offering this camp to ages 11 through 18, so teens and preteens, so some of the older youth. So if you know any older youth that are interested in learning about harvesting, how to harvest fish, we're going to be processing fish, smoking them, canning them. We're going to be doing wild harvest of berries and botanicals, and we're going to be canning and making jams and jellies. We're going to be, if a successful hunt of a deer occurs, then we're going to be processing the deer and learning about butchering and making sausage and everything else. It's going to be a ton of fun. We're going to be teaching the kids about navigation with GPS. We're going to be jumping in kayaks. We're going to be doing all kinds of great stuff. Now, it's based out at Saga. And so those of you who are here in Juneau are familiar with Saga. It's out towards Amalga Harbor. They've got a great Eagle Valley Center facility out there. And as a partner, they are going to be where we base. The youth are going to be staying in the cabin there. And that's where we're going to be having our activities based out of. So we're just going to be having a lot of fun out there. Kids are going to be learning about any number of other things having to do with harvesting, basic firearm safety, and wilderness survival, leadership skills. So it's going to be a fun 4-H camp, and it's going to be in August, August 16th through the 19th. And so that's a Tuesday through a Friday. And again, ages 11 through 18. So this is right the last week, just before school starts. If you have some preteens or teens who are interested in this kind of outdoor stuff, or maybe have them give me a call. I'm at 796-6281, and I'm very happy to let them know about the camp. And we have all kinds of offerings with 4-H in addition to this camp that help kids kind of make the best out of what we've got here in Alaska, and that's a lot. We've got an abundance of natural and other resources and great folks to help out. We've got great partners with DIPAC, with Department of Fish and Game, U.S. Forest Service, and other amazing adults to help make this camp happen. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
And how much does it run?
The fee is $100, which is extremely reasonable for a 4-day overnight camp. And there are scholarships available as well if that's just a little bit too steep for some folks. So it's 796-6281. And look for the flyers around town. We're going to be getting those out.
I like the flyer here. It says, come to a 4-day discovery and skill building residential camp. Have fun learning how to eat safely and sustainably harvest and process and eat our wild and cultivated Alaska products. That's, you get the chance to eat the food they grow at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's the best part of it. You know, that's the motivating factor. You know, we all got to eat, and we might as well eat what we know is good, healthy food. Another partner I have to mention is the Arboretum. Merrill Jensen out there and the CBJ have been wonderful contributors to our educating our youth about growing. That old garden out there at the Arboretum is very productive, and so we're going to be harvesting Tlingit potatoes out there.
I got to ask this. What are Tlingit potatoes?
These are potatoes that have a genetic lineage that's been traced down to Chile, and how they got here is kind of open for question. They'll probably be trying to answer that hundreds of years from now, but it's been genetically traced and connected to the native potatoes in the Northwest, in the Washington, Oregon area, otherwise known as the Kasan, and I believe the Ozette potatoes, and the ones that we're growing here, I think were brought down most recently from Klukwan, but, you know, they just get passed around and traded around, and, you know, true to a native tradition of passing these things around and trading them around, they were spread throughout Southeast and throughout the Northwest.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Again, the phone number?
796-6281.
And the companion planting gardening lecture is on Monday at 6:30?
Monday at 6 p.m.
At 6 o'clock. And if people need more information, is there a different phone number, or is that the same phone number?
It's the same phone number.
All right. I've been talking to James David Sneed and also Darren Snyder about various activities involved with the Cooperative Extension Service and also a little bit about compost. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask? Inspirational words for gardeners everywhere?
Well, I think that gathering and gardening are two faces of the same coin. They go together very, very well, and the gathering certainly keeps us in touch with nature that we came from and live within. And we hope to see you Monday night.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
You know, it's always fun to have a brand new shiny toy. They're fun to play with. But as I look back to when I was a little boy, I think my favorite toy was good old dirt. Dirt. It's quiet, it don't make noise. It's fun to play with, especially for boys. Girls don't much like it, but that's okay. Boys don't like girls much anyway. Dirt, dirt, good old dirt. Dirt, dirt, good old dirt. It may sound silly, but it really don't hurt to sing about good old dirt. It hurts just a little if it gets in your eyes. You can put it in water and make mud pies. Babies will eat it, but babies are dumb. They wet their diapers and suck on their thumbs. Dirt, dirt, good old dirt. Dirt, dirt, good old dirt. It may sound silly, but it really don't hurt to sing about good old dirt. Cost a thing, cause it's everywhere. You can take it back home and nobody cares. You can throw it, kick it, and it don't even hurt. So a kid's best friend has just gotta be dirt.
Time is 3:53, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Coming up this weekend is the Southeast Alaska State Fair. One of the groups performing is Alaska Skagway. Here's a little sample of their music now.
My soda, she drinks ginger cola. I dance the polka, she dances the hula. I take her walking, she does the talking. Moon is the shining, my heart is pining. She says, oh Johnny, don't try to tease me. Oh no, no Johnny, you may not squeeze me. Julada, Julada, you are my honey.
Julada, Julada,
I have lots of money.
Money, Julada, Julada,
you are my baby.
Julada, Julada.
at the Alaska State Fair. I don't know what it is. That is the group, the Windy Valley Boys, from their CD, Alaska Skagway. You'll be able to hear more of that tonight. And lots more great music on Friends and Neighbors starting at 7 o'clock here on KTRNN-FM in Juneau. Coming up at 5 o'clock on KRNN with Tideline, Angeline Arne. You can tune in as she chats with members of the fantastically fun rockabilly band from Whitehorse, the Saskatchewan Sasquatch Prom Date. You are tuned to KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sarasuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871, or also on the internet at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Captain Don Warner of the Salvation Army about his new leadership post in Juneau. Also, Christy Erickson will be here to talk about this weekend's Campus Film Festival, and we'll get news and views about local art during Arts Up with guest Nancy DeJourney. It's coming up tomorrow at 3 here on KTOO News. With the forecast for tonight, decreasing clouds, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, partly cloudy skies in the morning, then becoming sunny in the afternoon. Reminder that Miller Construction Company will be blasting on the Glacier Highway Extension Project 2.8 miles past Echo Cove, taking place tomorrow between 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. It's happening again tomorrow. If you need more information about that, give us a call here at KTOO at 586-1212. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon today, and have a great evening.
Pájaros pretos apretan su corazón por los cielos arriba.